your mistake is just, it's who you are. And it's all you are. And I'm not just talking about the scholarship here. I'm talking about everything. I mean, they'll smile at you, they'll pat you on the head, but they are never, ever letting you in. But listen, listen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, because you don't need them. I mean, they're not gonna give it to you, so what? You're gonna take it. You're gonna do whatever it takes, do you hear me? You are not gonna play by the rules. You're gonna go your own way, you're gonna do what they won't do. You're gonna be smart, you are gonna cut corners, and you are gonna win. They're on the 35th floor, you're gonna be on the 50th floor. You're gonna be looking down on them. And the higher you rise, the more they're gonna hate you. Good, good. You rub their noses in it. You make them suffer. You don't matter all that much to them. So what? So what? Screw them. Remember, the winner takes it all.
But your buddy's worse off when he throws you his car keys. Blue lights are blinking, 4 o'clock in the morning. State Trooper makes you wish that you'd never been born.
Better call Saul, better call Saul.
You wanna tell the world you're in love with a girl named Fran. So you find an overpass and you say it with a spray paint can. Blue lights start a blinking, those handcuffs click. You know who to call and you better call quick.
Saul, Saul, you better call Saul. You fight for your rights when your back's to the wall. Stick it to the man, justice for all.
Welcome to the Back-to-Back Podcast on the Count the Dings Network. This is the TV Book Club, a nuanced discussion about television that captures our imaginations. I'm your host, Anthony Mays, and joining us this time are Jake Hoy, Anthony Canton III, and executive producer Jade Hoy. This week we're going to talk about the Better Call Saul finale winner. Just a little housekeeping right off the top. We were wrong last week, as we were corrected on Twitter, I believe. Gene does not appear in the season finales. He only appears in the cold opens for the season premieres. So the next time we'll see Gene is next year sometime. And then I just wanted to point out that in our discussion of like how Jimmy blew his panel review last week, I think really the important part that we failed to mention was when they asked who most influenced him, and he said the University of American Samoa Go Land Crabs instead of Chuck. That was his opportunity to get Chuck into the conversation, and he really flubbed that question. So
that's right. Yeah.
This was another extended episode, 85 minutes with commercials, 1 hour of actual runtime. And how did you guys feel? How do you feel about the season coming to the end, AC?
Well, it's interesting because if I want to be honest about it, the only thing out of this episode that really, really got me excited was Lalo, to be honest.
He
I think
fucking killed it.
He was amazing. It was excellent to watch that whole story with him and Mike unfold throughout the episode. And then, of course, him calling Werner at the hotel and having that discussion, and then Mike intervening, and then of course we know that Gus knows that Lalo's on his tail and has been watching the operation the entire time. I found that more interesting than anything else. As far as we'll get into it a little bit more. As far as the Mike story goes, I was not a fan of where they took it in the second half of the season. Not in terms of execution, but the reasoning why, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But the Jimmy stuff, as always, is compelling.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the Lalo thing is definitely the strongest part of the end of this season here, because what he came in at the end of episode 8 is his introduction. So basically, in 2 episodes, they've set up an excellent antagonist for season 5.
Yes,
and the pending Lalo troublemaking and what his plans are and stuff is really well set up here, and definitely excited for that. Jake, how did you feel?
I felt pretty good about this episode, actually. I really wasn't sure, as I said, where we were going or how we were going to conclude. So it was nice to achieve a strong resolution in terms of storyline. And also, you know, I think we all love watching these cons unfold. And Jimmy's always at his most entertaining when he's engaged in some sort of con. Mm-hmm. And this episode, that whole storyline was one long con, right? And it was funny to see how they were going to work it, what direction, how they were trying to do it, what goals they had with it, the indirect goals and the direct goals. I mean, paying $23,000 for a reading room was pretty funny. Standing at a gravestone hoping people would come by was pretty funny. The performance, the various performances he put on were entertaining, and the payoff was huge. You know, I think I bought in, although I was curious at the end about the tone and the language he was using. But in many ways, I was buying into his story the same way that Kim was buying into it. I thought we were having an interesting transformative moment, you know, where he was.
And we were, just not rethinking. In the way that you were expecting. Yeah.
Right. We were the judges, you know. We were the judges.
You know what's funny about that is we see Jimmy earlier in the episode all of a sudden when his car wouldn't start breaking down and crying. Yeah. And I think that led us to believe that when he was up there, he was saying something truly coming from the heart. And then when you see the opposite, it's like, oh, okay, this is Saul.
We're on the way. We're on the path now.
Yeah. And then finally, you got to kick it to Jade, who's been chomping at the bit to get this takeoff. Jade, how do you feel about the finale, my friend?
All in all, I just felt it was a little off.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
How you doing?
Hey, Dad.
Greetings, Papa Hoy.
Hi, Jacob.
hold on. I just got to finish my thoughts on the episode, then we can get to you. I just felt it was off for some reason. It didn't feel like the nine other episodes. It felt a little fast. They like got a lot into this episode. Some of the cuts were a lot quicker, I think. I didn't measure them scientifically. I thought his transition to Saul was too abrupt for me. Maybe it just didn't go the way I wanted it to go. You know what I mean? So we had been discussing it for a few episodes, and we thought that Kim's would meet tragedy when that was going to happen, and it didn't happen that way. But I don't know. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't as great as I thought it was or hoped it would be. You know.
But I like the quickness of it. Actually, I kind of like the ramping up of the pace in this episode, and especially when it came to the Mike and Lalo storyline, because that needed some energy. You know,
I felt like that chase would have taken about 90 minutes to track him down. You know what I mean? Lalo wasn't evil enough for me. I think he needs to get a little bit more evil. You know what I want him to be like? You know, the No Country for Old Men character.
Yeah.
That's kind of there's a similarity there, and I wanted him to be like, for instance, the guy in the wire store. I wanted him dead, you know,
right away.
Well, no, but
he was dead.
Did Fred,
he
kill him? You want to kill Fred?
Did he kill him?
Yeah. Don't kill Fred.
Yeah, he was laid out. Remember at the end, he's laying on the floor.
He just knocked him out. He didn't kill him.
Yeah.
You guys are harsh on Fred here, dude. Fred's just trying to, you know, get a paycheck working
I think Fred is dead.
Still very good. Fred is dead.
Fred's dead, baby.
Yeah. I thought it was still very good, and I watched it start to finish without any pausing. So very, very good. It just, not as good as I'd hoped.
No, it didn't have a finale feel the way previous seasons had, and certainly not in the way that Breaking Bad had. You know, and that was the struggle of, I think, this whole season was, and part of the problem was the fad of the Super Lab story. It's like, where is this really going? You know, and so they paid it off, but there was such a long road getting there, and at the expense of some characters that we'd really rather be watching, like Nacho, who was absent again.
Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah. Poor guy, Michael Mando. Still needs a new agent, I think, after in conclusion of this year. I think that's the conclusion. We are of course joined by Rich Hoy. Rich, what did you think of the finale?
Well, you know, it's funny because after watching the episode before episode number 9, I was telling Valerie, my wife, known on your show, some of your shows as Mama Hoy.
The great Mama Hoy.
The legend.
But I was telling her that, you know, the show is like, and there was an interesting review in the New York Times, and had the same point, you know, said, like, watching this show is like watching two shows, and one is better than the other. So he likes the part about Jimmy and Chuck and the law firm and, you know, slipping Jimmy and all that stuff, and feels like the other half of the story, which has something to do with Breaking Bad, is not very well developed and doesn't have character development.
You agree with that take?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, it's like they spent 3 years or 4 years working with trying to bring Jimmy up to speed here where he was in Breaking Bad. Basically, you're getting all of this story when you, you know, when you talk about Chuck and the law firm, his brother, and what happened with his brother, and how he's trying to get back to being a lawyer. But there's things that we already know, and you know, we already know if we've watched Breaking Bad, we know that this relationship must be coming to an end between Kim and Jimmy. He made an interesting comment about in the episode 9, you know, one part is telling us about, he said, how humanity is flawed and redemption sometimes unattainable. Another part is telling us how Hector Salamanca got the bell on his wheelchair.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
They're filling in pieces of that Breaking Bad story without telling a story with characters that we're getting, you know, to know. You know, we get to see Gus Fring. We see he's just as terrifying as he always was in Breaking Bad, but we're not getting much of character development on that side of the story.
Yeah,
it's true. I think that's a product of them extending this this process of Jimmy becoming Saul, because right. We know that they originally intended to do that earlier, but because they found so much runway with all of this Chuck storyline and the Jimmy Kim storyline, that's pushed everything back. So I feel like the Mike, Gus, Nacho, Hector side of this show is a little underdeveloped, but that's only because we haven't fully merged the worlds. And I think that's coming next season. Now that Jimmy is officially Saul, we're finally going to get scenes with right. Jimmy and Mike, Jimmy and Gus, Jimmy yeah. and Nacho. And that's yeah. really going to tie the show together.
Well, yeah, I think,
What's that?
Oh, no, go ahead.
It's just that they said that the writer of the article, his name is James Paniewicz I don't know how you pronounce it, but it was a couple of days ago in the New York Times. And he said that at the end of the article, he said that on some level, I admire Better Call Saul for its eccentricity and patience. Yeah. Breaking Bad was deliberate too. Yet at the end of 4 years, it had established Walter as the drug lord, Heisenberg, and had built momentum for one last season. Yeah. Better Call Saul is telling a smaller story, yet for better and less better, it feels like it just got started.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of what we've been talking about on this show for this whole season. And that's everybody agrees that this is a very patient show. And so I think we're going to slow burn. Yes, I think we're just going to jump right into the cold open, which I really love this cold open. This was a really fun one. It's a flashback to Jimmy's bar review. We see Chuck vouching for him in court. Then we get a nice smash cut to Ernie, who, to be honest, I'd kind of forgotten about Ernie.
Yeah.
But he's singing karaoke. Jimmy and Kim are celebrating. Jimmy convinces Chuck to stay and then eventually convinces him to join him on stage to sing ABBA, The Winner Takes It All. There's that incredible moment when Chuck shoves Jimmy out of the way because Jimmy's singing off key, and Chuck just goes on to just shred it, which is just classic Chuck. And then he stays, he takes his wasted brother back to the apartment and puts him in bed and asks him what he wants for breakfast. And, you know, of course, this was in a reenactment of Jake and Jade on Friday night after the live show.
I missed that the other day, by the way.
Well played, mates.
I will tell you, as an addendum to that,
that
Jade and I had a conversation on Saturday morning about a conversation we had on Friday night in front of my place. And he goes, "What? When was that? Where? Here? What time? What? Who?"
By the way, every time I see Chuck, I miss him greatly. I did not like him when he was on the show.
It's so funny, isn't it? It's so it's small doses. The thing is, we were so sick. But here's the beauty, I think, of Chuck this season. He's not bogged down with this electromagnetic disease.
Yes, yeah. His condition hasn't cleared up yet.
That's the thing that drove me crazy.
Like, it's not that he's not a great actor or a great character. It was just that the tedium of the disease was just enough already.
I have to admit, I was pleasantly surprised and pleased to see Chuck in a good mood and Chuck and Jimmy getting along in that instance. And you see Jimmy wanting to please his brother. And that's like always been him talking to Kim about, you know, Chuck not wanting to really stay around and he's going to leave and stuff like that. And, you know, he went out of his way to, you know, make Chuck feel better in probably a situation where he wasn't feeling too great, considering all the stuff that we already had heard about with his divorce and all of those things. So it was nice to see the two brothers get along in that. And it kind of like, It's another example of what this show does in terms of the emotions and making you, you know, relate to the characters in a sense, is the whole brotherly bond stuff. So I found that did a great job of showing you and illustrating that particular story.
Yeah, and they just close it out by singing "Winner Takes It All" again together in bed.
I was
interested in placing this in the timeline, right? Because like you guys mentioned, his condition hasn't like started yet, but then they do casually mention like his divorce and if he would talk to any women. Kim and Jimmy are mentioning that in the karaoke bar, and then also placing Ernie into the timeline as well. So it's roughly, what, like 5 to 10 years ago, something like that, like after the mailroom scene that we saw earlier in this season, but before the events of the show.
Probably a year or so before the show starts.
Yeah,
I would guess. I mean, because Jimmy, by the time, as I said earlier when we were pre-gaming, I watched the first two episodes, and you know, you're reminded that Jimmy's just a struggling public defender trying to get a foothold in the business, right?
Yeah.
So he's really
fully
just
out of HHM.
He's, but he was never in HHM post law school. You know, he goes to law school and then he's on his own. It's not like where Kim was fast tracked into the company. He's put out on his own to hang his own shingle. And, you know, one of the cool things that one of the cool details that I had forgotten about those early episodes is that, you know, Jimmy goes in to Hamlin after receiving like a check for $20,000 and he tears it up and he walks into the meeting and tells Hamlin that he's got to pay his brother $17 million for him to walk away. But neither Hamlin wants Chuck to leave and Chuck thinks he's going to kick the disease and come back. So he doesn't want to leave either. So Jimmy's just trying to find that major payday for himself by negotiating a big settlement for his brother that he doesn't even want. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, but one of the key things when he goes and tells his brother and gets deflated because Chuck's telling him, I'm coming back, Jimmy. You don't need to worry. And he goes, by the way, and he hands him his matchbook with his business on it. And he goes, you know, Howard, talk to me about this. We really think you should pursue law under a different name.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You're hurting the HHM brand.
Yeah,
Jimmy.
You're hurting the brand. You should. What about Endeavor and law?
That's a great tease for something we'll talk about later in this episode for sure. So let's get through the Mike, Werner, Gus, Lalo subplot, because it was really just alternating between those two in this episode. We pick up with Mike. And he's debriefing his team, who, of course, he doesn't need at all. He's got these five guys or whatever, and they end up basically doing nothing the entire episode. And we learn that Werner has a 3.5 hour head start, didn't bring his passport because he's not trying to leave the country. And so then Mike guesses Werner had his wife wire money to a travel wire. He figures out the location. But when he gets there, he's immediately cut the head start down to 1 hour. So we cut like 2.5 hours out of time just by like thinking of the travel place. And he schmoozes the guy, Fred, our guy, Fred's not dead, into letting him see the security footage, claims to be Werner's brother-in-law, and then just recalls the detail about the hot springs. And that's how he tracks him down. But in the meantime, Lalo is watching Gus's Pollos Hermanos trucks, taking license plates down, other info, patterns, just observing Gus's business. He sees Gus, Tyrus, and Victor get in their SUVs, and it's, you know, it's obviously because of the Werner news. Gus goes to meet Mike, and he brings Lalo to Mike. And so what do you guys think about, like, why? So Lalo is interested in Mike because of the urgency of the meeting. Is that why he jumps off Gus's tail?
That's a good question.
As entertaining as it all was, from a narrative standpoint, I was a little confused because last episode, Lalo seems to just be wanting to gather information to give himself a good position with Gus. Why he gets involved in an aggressive tale on Mike to the point where he's insinuating himself into the situation in the, the wire store. I was like, why would he put himself out like this? Why would he expose himself like this?
I could see our theory coming to like reality, right? We predicted that this whole scenario was going to be a Mike has to kill someone scene.
Right.
I thought for a brief moment that Werner was going to get away and he was going to kill Lalo. Mm-hmm. So I thought they interject him into this whole thing for that reason, because I didn't understand it at all.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that they did it because it adds a level of drama and suspense to this episode that wouldn't have been there if he was just tracking Werner the whole time. Right. I think what attracts Lalo is so he sees Gus like hustling, right? So obviously he knows something's going on and something important. And so that leads him to Mike. So then he's just trying to figure out what's going on with Mike. Why does he... I feel like he might have stayed on Gus's tail, but for the purposes of this episode, you know,
basically he smells something interesting
right.
and follows it out.
It's a setup too for next season, clearly.
Yes, they're exactly. Like yes. we needed Lalo to get some leverage. It's
going to be Mike and Lalo, right?
Right.
And Gus.
Lalo and Gus.
That character, I don't know if you talked about it last week, but Tony Dalton, guest appearing at playing this part of Lalo. He's Mr. Avila from a very...
He's the star of Mr. Avila?
Yeah. He's nice. Like Mr. Avila just wrapped up its fourth and final season on HBO Latin. And I'm just so thrilled to have him on the show because he's such a great actor. And
he is great.
He's amazing.
He's playing the lower man here, you know, in Mr. Avila, right. He's the top guy.
Right.
But see, he's after Gus because Hector doesn't trust Gus.
Right.
And we know that from Breaking Bad. They're very, you know, they butt heads. And he's trying to figure out what's going on here. You know, what is the Chicken Man up to? We call him the Chicken Man, right, from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
But you know, what is he up to? And he's suspicious. You know, because they're doing business with the Mexican cartel, and this is all, you know, Hector Salamanca. And Lalo's a cousin of his, right? And he's checking up on the Chicken Man. They don't trust him.
No, that makes sense. But why he so quickly jumps into, first of all, it's not ever a good move to get into a traffic accident, right? Like he just drives himself into that car.
Yeah.
He just makes weird decisions. That's all. Yeah. Like he's such a smart guy. He's such a charismatic character and actor. Like I know they're it's one of those situations. It seems to me that they're overjoyed that they got this guy to play this character because he exceeds their expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And they start doing more with him. But it just wasn't credible to the overall story. Like Mike would never break form like that. You know, if the guy's going to be a good tale, be a good tale. And he obviously ends up doing some tremendous detective work, but he risks so much in the way that he goes about it, which doesn't strike me as the way they've set the character up or true to the character that they've established already.
Yeah. I mean, and also being on camera at that place. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think going back to the way that they introduced Lalo, it seems like they wanted to introduce him as this fun loving, I don't care, I'm doing whatever. I like it doesn't have a care in the world the way that he talks to Hector, the way that he talks to Nacho, and the way that he tails everybody. And like you said, Jake, driving and hitting that guy on the way out to chase Mike.
Yeah,
he seems like he's going to be a real wild card next season.
Yeah, there's some recklessness to him, and because he's definitely smart. But
which
he's
is
not
Salamanca,
as calculated.
Right?
Yeah, he's a Salamanca. This is a Salamanca. Yeah.
He's a little crazy.
They're all but that was the funny
it's
thing.
In the blood,
it made it seem like he might be a different kind of Salamanca, not as rash as his uncle, Frank.
Right.
Or is Tuco? Do we establish that Tuco's a Salamanca?
Tuco is a Salamanca.
Yeah, of course,
Salamanca,
right?
Yeah.
Right, and he's batshit crazy.
Right. Tuco.
Yeah, it's because he's dipping into the product. But
bro,
yeah.
That's true. But no, he's always been crazy though.
also, I should mention that Lalo just dropping out of the vent, the editing in that was something else. Him landing on his feet was pretty funny.
See, at first I thought he tore the camera out with the gun.
I gotta give it another whirl, you know.
No, there was all of that stuff was really entertaining. I mean, it was on that level, it did not disappoint.
Yeah. So Gus comes to see Mike, asks to see the note from Werner. Mike, still showing his vulnerability, says that he believes Werner. Gus, of course, already knows that Werner's wife is flying into Denver. He's just going to trail her to the location and kill them both. He doesn't even like that. That moment kind of took all of the tension out of this chase, right? It's like Gus already has it handled, but Mike says, no, this is on me. I'll fix it.
I thought that was a nice touch that Werner was just trying to take his 4-day vacation.
But you gotta be fucking kidding me, Werner.
Yeah, I know. It was a little stupid.
A lot. Because if you think about this, it's like you really working for a drug cartel. What do you think's gonna happen? Oh, I wanna take a vacation and see my wife for 4 days. What do you think is gonna happen, bro? What's happening there? It's like, come on.
The Werner part is the part that I found really terrible about this episode, but I think me and Jade agreed on that.
Yeah, there's a few weird things like that. Like as careful as Mike is, you know, and as careful as he is, and he's, you know, he's a man of few words, and he was the one that took Werner there to the bar.
Yeah.
And then left him there.
And yeah, then, it's, you know, it's on Mike, back like he says.
A couple hours later. And you know, in episode 9, he comes back a couple hours later, you know, and this guy is telling everybody at the table about the secret place that they're building.
Right.
Well, you know? This show is a weird show.
Didn't it frustrate you too that Gus was like automatically going straight to kill him when really it's a pain in the ass, obviously.
No, because that's the name of the game. That's the name of the game in Breaking Bad. It just makes me remember.
But it's not Breaking Bad yet.
No, I know. What I mean? But the part of it that we're talking about connects to Breaking Bad. And in Breaking Bad, that's what they do. They kill people. It's like remember Walter White?
Yeah.
And for people that don't remember, we know what happens between Walter White. I don't know whether you want to talk about it, but in the future, we know what happens between Walter White and Mike.
Oh, Mike. Yeah. Right. Of course. No, but that's when.
It's all about killing people because that's the way that world operates.
And that's the way that Gus has built his empire. No loose ends, full measures on Gus's part all the way. And, you know, Mike is new to this game.
Yeah, I guess that's that. And we talked about this, that this was probably going to be the end game for the story, is that it's going to push Mike over that line. But I did find it strange that Gus would do it at his own expense, you know, like. Gus still needs that lab done.
Money's not the issue, Jake.
Yeah, no, I know. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we'll get into conversation later. There's a conversation they have that just kind of underlines this whole point.
Because eventually that you'll undermine yourself if you don't adhere to the principle of it. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't know if it happened to you, but when in episode 9 and 10, whenever they get to the restaurant where they got somebody waiting for Gus Spring, you know, I expect to see Walter White out there, one of the characters from Breaking Bad,
right?
You know,
right?
It's like this time Nacho, and you know that they talk about this review in the New York Times. You know, Nacho has a fear written all over his face whenever he looks at Hector Salamanca and anybody else who's like him. You know, but he's in a position where he's just trying to get through his relationship with all these people, but he's scared of them, you know?
Right.
Terrified of them.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that accounts for his diminished role this season, is just how, you know, like we've talked about before, his lack of agency at this current moment. So
we never experience Mike's realization other than the final in the car or whatever when he's got to kill Werner. We don't really go through the transformation process of him. This, you know what I'm saying?
Crossing the line,
like when he signs up for this
Mike
job
to Breaking Bad Mike.
When he signs up for this job, does he sign up for it knowing that he's going to involve killing people?
I think
no.
so.
No,
I think he's trying to think he's.
He just
do
wants it,
his it
to be
way.
Kai.
He was doing the security thing at the
that
the
was
big
he was
factory.
Bored.
You know.
Yeah.
We didn't really ever see a process of like, oh shit, I may have to. You know.
But Mike knows what type of man Gus is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You're right. He wasn't hesitating. And he wasn't, in his mind, it wouldn't have been a problem to take Kai out. We knew that.
Yeah.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just the who. Mm.
Yeah. Werner is complicated for him for whatever reason. And it's in their friendship or whatever, which we don't. Isn't fully established.
What did he say? What did he say,
understand.
Mace? What was that line? My friend Mike.
Oh, that? God. My friend Michael would be very, very angry.
That was a lot, man.
Get the
that
fuck was... out of here, Werner.
I was happy to see him get shot.
Avita Zane. yeah. Man. So Mike, of course, remembers the detail of the hot springs. He goes to the Travel Wire. He finds the local hot springs. So once again, you know, he has his team doing all this work for no point really. And then Lalo, you know, is taken to Mike by Gus and begins following Lalo. Mike realizes this immediately, and in one of the better sequences, one of the best showing not telling sequences of this episode, he pulls into a parking lot while furiously chewing gum. When he opens the glove compartment, of course, the gun is in the foreground as a misdirect for when he grabs the gum. But it's also a Chekhov's gun for later in the episode, of course.
Yes.
Then he pulls into the spot. He's chewing the gum. He puts it back in the wrapper. And then he waits for someone to leave the parking lot, pulls out abruptly, cutting that person off, jams up the parking ticket. Mm-hmm. Machine and traps Lalo behind the other driver. Of course, Mike knows how to do this because he's had so much parking lot experience in his life.
we remember that.
And he obviously has had to. He knows that gum will mess up the machine like nothing else.
Yeah,
so
he
did
sets him up for that.
Where that was going? That was
MacGyver pretty, at his finest.
That was great MacGyver action. Yeah, and then I love the you know Lalo just smashes into the guy like we talked about, and he makes the guy spill that big pink smoothie all over himself.
that guy was such a goofball.
Total schmuck right there. And then yeah, then there's the moment where he returns the Travel Wire. The camera follows Fred as he answers the phone and then cuts back. The Lalo's gone. He silently climbed into the ceiling, drops down, knocks out Fred, takes the tapes. And then this was a very convenient moment. He calls and reaches Werner before Mike gets there. I guess Mike didn't want to talk to Werner. Is that the idea?
Right.
Yeah. Because that seemed
very
convenient.
He was coming. He didn't want him to know he was coming.
Just in case he might flee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Lalo reaches Werner on the phone before Mike gets there, literally by seconds. And, you know, Werner, God, Mike, just blowing it so hard.
Yeah.
Who, first of all, he thinks that, like, it'll be totally fine for him to go away for a couple of days, even though he had to sneak out of the warehouse and he ran away. So it's like he really thought that he could just come back. He really didn't get the veiled message from Mike about how serious it was after he told the people at the bar. Like this characterization of Werner as just kind of an affable German who just loves to run his mouth to people he hasn't met about a super secret project on the phone is just like, it's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the worst thing about this season, the characterization of Werner. It just threw me off, and the kind of quick setup with him and Mike threw me off too. I think that could have been done better, but I only feel like they just used that as a vehicle to, I guess, give Mike a story for the back half of the season to say, okay, this is one of the reasons that he turned into this.
Yeah, I mean, this was narrative convenience. We talked about this with the barroom scene too, how unrealistic it would be to think, like, even with a few drinks, why would he draw up the super lab on a cocktail napkin?
Yeah. Right.
Like, really? Like, you could come up with a million architectural problems to talk to somebody about, but you're going to draw the one super secretive project you're here and they've got you locked up in a warehouse for because they're trying to seclude you so much. You know, it's like it just was unbelievable. The guy was driven to the location with his head in a bag and nearly threw up, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
He knows the stakes. You know, he knows what he's being paid.
And I think that this, well, first of all, this type of convenient characterization and writing is totally unlike this show. It's not what this show does. It's not what Breaking Bad does. They usually earn everything. And I think this is like a symptom of the time jump. So the time jump, which was helpful in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. in getting Hector healthy and advancing Jimmy's plot, it hurt this Mike Werner plot line because it rushed it and it just kind of forced us to accept this is how Werner is. This is how Mike feels about him. And they didn't really put the work in there, which is too bad.
Right.
Mm. But so Mike, of course, gets there. Intercepts the phone call, but it's not after some details are already shared. And then he picks up the phone, and there's the great moment where Lalo figures out that it's Michael, and
yes.
and then he just smiles. And so then Mike takes Gus out into the Mike calls Gus from the middle of nowhere, where he takes Werner out there, and this the conversation that I mentioned before. So Mike says, "I'd go another way." Gus says, "That I know." Mike says, "That'd be a mistake." And then Gus says, "This discussion serves no purpose," which is just the most chilling example of Gus's ruthless, efficient, calculated nature and just his zero tolerance for any loose ends. It's not acceptable in Gus's world.
And you can't blame him for that because we already saw that situation occur one time already. And Gus allowed Mike to go another way, and now this is the second time. So it's like, I kind of get it.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising that Gus isn't more upset. But I guess, and that's even after Mike tells him that Lalo knows something, you know?
Well, I think that comes from their conversation the prior episode. And him already understanding that Lalo is
a player.
Yeah, he's a player. So he already knows he has to be careful around him. So when Gus kind of alludes to the fact that he realizes that he knows who it is, it's like he's a smart dude. He's been around this situation before.
But Michael also played coy there and didn't exactly tell him what happened.
Yeah, because he didn't know because he wasn't there.
Right. But he also didn't say he may have said more than he should. Right.
Yes. He definitely downplayed.
He downplayed.
He said it won't be useful information, exactly. Which of course is not true. It will be.
Yes.
And so then, you know, Mike decides that he doesn't want Gus's guys to do it. He'll handle Werner himself. But of course he can't kill him without asking him, "What the fuck were you thinking?" Basically, like, what did you think would happen, Werner? And then we get the very, very angry line, and Mike has to explain to Werner, basically like a child, that he is broken trust and that's it for him. And it's like Werner doesn't really even think that he might die until that moment, which was also kind of unbelievable to me, you know?
Out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, very, very unrealistic.
We weren't looking at the stars, Mike.
And Jake, I thought this, and then Rich, I'm pretty sure you watched the show too. It reminded me of the probably the best scene of Barry when he has to take his partner. He has a similar conversation with his partner, but that scene was so much more intense and emotional than this scene, which was so, you know, kind of like mellow. And Werner's like, even when he learns that he has to die, he doesn't get like upset. He doesn't like break down. He's just, you know, he just wants to go home instead.
Yeah. And I thought he did. Alan Sepinwall alluded to this in his review, saying that basically Werner walking off into the distance saved Mike having to look him in the eye and shoot him.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
And then, you know, very unglamorous death for Werner, the end of the Werner storyline. You know, I hate to say it, but my French engineer, I am very in on him showing up in the next season premiere. Someone's got to finish this lab, man. I don't think Gail and Gus can do it by themselves.
Oh, shouts to Gail showing up in this episode again.
Yeah, great to see Gail. He's so excited. He wants to start cooking right now.
I can do a rudimentary cook right now.
Rudimentary cook.
He's so great, excited.
Great
so
line.
Excited. Or maybe then, not.
Or maybe not.
Yeah.
And he's got his notebook in his hand.
That scene made me wonder why we were even getting that scene. Like, why did Gus have him down if he wasn't ready to proceed in some fashion? I didn't quite understand.
I think that was just a tease, another Gail cameo, and they say that Gail is going to be more involved next year.
Okay.
It was just kind of like setting that up. In the featurette, they say that Gail is holding his super lab notebook, which of course is later discovered by Hank.
Right.
And Breaking Bad, and kind of gets the ball rolling on that. And then on his way out, of course, Gail meets Mike for the first time. It's just in passing.
Right.
But that was a cool little meeting. And then the weird thing, did you guys see this article that said that Giancarlo Esposito like broke his ankle or something?
Wow.
No.
So Giancarlo Esposito broke his ankle and they had to use like body doubles and like trick photography and shit to like make all of these scenes work in this episode.
Wow. I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
That's why he looks so unhappy.
Maybe.
I guess that's why he has no lines.
But there's in the scene with Gail, like the camera follows Gail while he's wandering around and then comes back to Gus, and Gus has moved, but we don't see him move. So it's like weird little things like that. But I thought the article's headline was like, this is why a cast member hasn't been in in Better Call Saul as much this season. I thought it was going to be about Nacho, but of course it was just about Gus and his broken ankle. So that ties up this storyline. I mean, like we talked about, it's setting up Lalo. It's setting up more Gail. It's setting up a potential French engineer return. And, you know, I think it has good things for the future, but I think they mishandled this Mike Werner situation. And I think Werner overall as a character will not be missed.
No, not at all. Yeah, well said, Maze.
Let's take it back. Let's go to the Kim, Jimmy, Long Con in this episode. Of course, Jimmy starts off at Chuck's grave, which we saw in the preview, and we were like, what the hell is he doing there? But he's there faking grief. He's muttering watermelon pickles, which is a phrase background actors in movies use to simulate crowd noise because it makes you look like you're saying different words. Kim, number one girlfriend, oh my God, she's just chilling in the car with coffee and donuts. You know, what do you need? You need a donut? You need a bear claw? I got you. And they're just basically fishing for anyone to see them, you know, playing the patient game once again. Stage two of the plan is the Charles McGill reading room. And so they totally faked me out with the Howard thing. What, did they get you guys as well?
In terms of would Howard be the anonymous donor?
Well, they made it seem like Howard was responsible for it because it starts with him on camera, right? And then like,
Then I actually thought they were playing a lie on
Jimmy. Yeah, punking Howard. As soon as you see the film crew, you're like, oh, what are they doing?
I thought they were just going to risk it with Jimmy being like, being that it was anonymous, they can just take credit for it.
Take the credit's what I thought.
That would have been a funnier thing, actually,
to me. Yeah, exactly. Definitely. What I thought they were doing was like, oh, since the person wants to be anonymous, I'll just take credit.
Right. Because, what was the number?
23,000.
It didn't seem like enough, right? It just, I don't know. Someone who donates that.
This is like a New Mexico public school library, library.
You know, like always got to bring it back to New Mexico, huh, Mace?
Yeah.
I know.
Albuquerque verse, Jade. It's important. Things are cheaper out there.
I think it would have been a funnier route, though.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, having him really write the check, I thought that was interesting, I guess, in the sense that I guess the burner business is pretty good, right? If he can drop 23 grand.
I know. I was wondering where he got that money.
Right.
That's some serious bread.
Well, yeah, because at first I was like, did he settle that thing, the Sandpiper case, you know?
He let that go, remember?
Right. He let the
Right, yes.
Yeah.
I kind of imagine that Huel has been selling burners solo for a while. And that's how Jimmy was able to afford this. But yeah, also, you know, it's been 8 months of the selling burners, so that you could rack up some coin like that. They've used Chuck's name as a draw to invite a lot of local attorneys, including the Davis and Maine attorneys that Jimmy, you know, worked for before. And they have the drama student lie to them or tell them that it was Jimmy who made the donations, not lying. And they're still, you know, they're trying to do character work for Jimmy. There's another cute Kim moment when she wipes the cigarette ash off of his blazer right before he launches into just the absurd idea to set a fire and rescue a judge, which Kim just stonewalls and is just like, time to get in there.
That's too funny.
And then the final part of the plan, and this was a great scene, I thought. I really enjoyed this, or I guess a couple scenes here, where we're back in the HHM boardroom and we're reviewing candidates for Chuck's scholarship. And they do that great, those sharp cuts right when the candidates start answering questions.
Yes.
That I thought was super funny.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Seinfeld.
What? Oh, yeah?
Do you remember that scene, Dad, in Seinfeld when they're looking for George's foundation, Susan's foundation. And George wants to hire the kid. It's almost a similar narrative because George wants to give the scholarship to the C student, you know, the kid that doesn't do that well.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Because he wants to be an architect.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, that's actually an incredible comparison because George, you know, chose a person like him.
Yes.
That he sees himself in, just like Jimmy campaigns for Christy Esposito, branded so condescendingly by the other members as the shoplifter, because he sees parallel to his own situation. He sees slipping Jimmy, somebody who's had to overcome mistakes they've made in the past and wants to do better. And he pitches this whole, you know, positive campaign for Christy, but then of course in the revote nothing changes, and so he runs her down in the parking lot, which was a weird scene because he scares and confuses her a lot, and maybe he got some of his message through, but this monologue is really him talking to himself, and it ends up with, you made a mistake and they are never forgetting it. As far as they're concerned, your mistake is who you are. It's all you are. And then that leads Jimmy back to his car where it won't start. And he breaks down and starts weeping. And man, that was the
misdirect.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Oh, no, the misdirect, as I spoke about earlier with, you know, us expecting, you know, when he's talking to the board at the end, we're really thinking those are real emotions. And then we, as it turns out, it was otherwise.
Yeah. So is Kim. Kim has a tear in her eye.
Yeah.
She believed it.
Yeah. She's a misdirect too.
This moment in the car, this moment in the car and the featurette, Bob Odenkirk says that this is the moment when Jimmy died and right. that anything that was left of him hoping died in this moment. And that obviously the final scene is the real birth of Saul rising like a phoenix.
So, yeah.
From the ashes of Jimmy McGill.
Getting back to that. See, I didn't really. That doesn't work for me. Doesn't work.
It didn't click.
No, it doesn't. I mean, why? Because his car didn't start?
No, because.
So what? The girl doesn't get the fucking scholarship? Who cares, right?
But it's not about her. It's about him.
I know. Yeah.
He's just talking to himself.
I know, but this doesn't work for me. It doesn't work.
You know what? It worked for me in the sense that that's the fundamental issue between Chuck and Jimmy, is that Chuck never lets Jimmy graduate beyond slipping Jimmy, right? Yeah. No matter, and that's what my point was in talking.
No, I understand, but
in talking, well, they respect Chuck.
It needed a stronger emphasis, like a.
But the.
A car not starting and a girl not getting a scholarship doesn't work for me as being
because he instantly empathizes with the person who's got something to overcome, and everyone else on the scholarship board has never had to overcome anything because they always did things the right way. They were given things, they were born with things, they whatever it may have been, and they never want to give somebody a break. They always want to give something to the person that has the best resume.
I get it, you know.
Yeah.
I wished it was stronger.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like the transition from Jimmy to Saul through this moment, I like Jimmy's always had his flaws, right? And not only his mistakes in his past, but even like in his review with the panel in the last episode, like there's still the shtick and the games and the cons and the things that he does, right? But I feel like he always had a good will. He always meant well. This moment, he's like, fuck
to me
that.
Was better. The scene in the hallway when he throws his bag against the wall, that to me was a much stronger moment.
Well, the funny thing is like when Jimmy says to the girl, you will cut corners, that's fundamentally who Jimmy is, right?
Yes.
That's why The Winner Takes All was a great song to open that show. Because it kind of in the lyrics outlines like what he's doing or what he's going to do to attempt to win, and which is effectively cheating. And Jimmy, what constantly gets him in trouble throughout the show is these times when, you know, remember when he gets the good job with the law firm?
Yeah. But Davis and Maine,
right? And he immediately screws things up by like putting an ad out that they would never approve. You know, it's like he immediately starts doing things that are not in sync with the overriding company philosophy. So he's always been his own man, but he's always going against the grain in a way that isn't necessarily in sync with the contemporary standards.
Yeah, he can't help himself in that instance.
He can't help himself.
And we've kind of seen that throughout this season in all of these instances with the burner phones and seeing Kim go off, get the new law job when his plan at the time was for them to start a law firm together. And I think all these slights and all these things came to pass. And, you know, especially in the argument that he had with Kim in episode 9, how he feels the perception of him always is. And he's like, you know what? I'll be that.
He's a fuck up.
Yeah. Yes, that's a great way. Yes.
Yeah.
He can't help himself.
He can't.
And his brother knows that. And his brother's always known that. And Jimmy is coming to grips, I guess, with the fact that, you know, he's a lot of this stuff doesn't make sense because they're forcing it so much, you know, to conform with the Breaking Bad story.
Yeah. Yeah.
The timelines and everything.
Yeah. And also they're only doing 10 episodes. And whereas Breaking Bad was pretty much completely devoted to Walter White with, you know, the other characters being supporting characters.
Right.
This show does have multiple main characters when it's really supposed to be about Jimmy.
Right. Which is Dad's. What
do you find out when you get into the law world? You know, if you didn't go to the best school and you didn't go to the, you didn't finish in the top 10 of your class, you know, you're not going to get any of these great jobs in law firms. You're not going to get great government jobs either. And you're lucky if you're going to find a job at all. So what do you have left? You have to hang out a shingle and do whatever you can do. Remember how he starts out with the in the old folks home, you know?
Right.
And the bingo games. This guy will do anything, you know?
Right. Yeah, hustling.
To try to make it on his own, you know?
Right.
Including breaking the law.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Right. So eventually he gets to a level where in the future in Breaking Bad, he's telling Walter White that this particular character needs to die or this. He gets to that level. So watching the transformation has been very fun to watch over these first four seasons for sure.
Yeah. So that we get to the final scene, which is the him going to the courthouse with Kim. There's the great little moment of them walking together. And that's after he talks to her about using Chuck's letter as basically it's like a statement about him, essentially.
Yeah.
I thought that was clever how they brought the letter back in such a fundamental way to the plot. I did like that turn.
I especially liked how different his tone was reading the letter this time compared to the haphazard way he did while eating cereal. And Kim says to him, you know, Jimmy, whatever happens in there, I'm with you. So supportive, such a great girlfriend. And then, you know, Jimmy puts down the letter, pauses, and then like improv, like jazz.
Yeah.
He rips off this honest, endearing, proper eulogy for Chuck that acknowledges his brother's legal acumen and character, as well as his own court deficiencies and shortcomings. You know, he says he hopes to be worthy of the name McGill, but of course he's about to change his name and needs a DBA. And he hooks the panel, he hooks Kim, he hooked us, and then of course it was all a con.
Yeah, he comes out of the hearing. He's proud of his talents.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's where they lie, you know? He had to say, you know, he said he got his degree at online.
American Samoa.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, who knows? He could become a great defense lawyer. You know, it is a lot of... little tricks to becoming a good defense lawyer, but you know he seems like the person that would be up for that type.
Yeah,
of
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's always had the charisma and the storytelling ability to do that for sure,
and the performative qualities necessary to sway a jury, right? And you kind of it's funny because the first episode opens with him defending those three idiots who decapitate like a dead and then have sex with a head on a video. Remember? I don't remember if you remember. And he like badly loses that case, like after putting on this over the top performance for the jury about boys just being boys at that age. You know, and so it's like it's like for me, it's like nature or nurture, right? What are we trying to establish here in this origin story? Are we just seeing somebody who's finally becoming what they were always meant to be? And all of this is just plot and narrative to kind of get us from point A to point B? Or are we supposed to believe that he could have gone down the right path, as it were, if not for his brother Chuck and everybody else, by extension, holding his past against him? And I tend to lean in the direction that this is just who he was always meant to be.
Yeah, right. I'm with you on that.
Absolutely agree, 100%.
I think it's kind of the evolution. It's like the humanity getting washed out of a man until nothing but a caricature is left, right? Like, that's where we end up. We end up with this wisecracking, hilarious, evil lawyer. And this show has gone back and put a man in there, except that man has been, you know, washed away. And especially by the end of this episode, I feel like he really doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to be good anymore. That's for sure.
But he's not evil in the same way that Walter White becomes evil, right?
I don't know, man.
In some ways, he's more cold. You could see it in Breaking Bad that as funny and charming as he is, you get the sense that there is that coldness, like, you know, whatever works to get the job done, it doesn't matter. I don't care. that whole idea. And it's almost like, you know, we talk about Lalo earlier. Yeah. Lalo is he's a very interesting person. He's very gregarious. You watch him on the screen and he just oozes magnetism. But you just know there's a wild dude inside there. And it's almost, and the opposite is, you know, from that standpoint is Jimmy, with Jimmy being, you know, very cool and funny and all this stuff, but you realize he's a scumball by the end of this. So it's interesting to see all of those things.
So yeah, of course we get him walking down the hallway, turning back to Kim, who can't even really get a word out in this whole. It happens so fast in this moment.
Yeah,
he drops the Saul Goodman and. And that's it. And that's the end of the season.
Her reaction was something.
Oh man, Kim with some great acting in this episode, as as always, dude. That woman, Rhea Seehorn, she is something else.
But Odenkirk killed it though.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah, he killed it. He killed it.
That was
tremendous.
Season.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yo, by the way, Mike, when was Mike out of character? On the phone was hilarious.
Call the wire service.
Oh, no. When he's talking to Fred at the wire.
Yeah. As the brother-in-law, whatever.
He was totally acting a totally different way, you know, like sympathetic. Yeah. It was funny as hell.
He's diabetic.
The other funny ass scene was Lalo with the cooler on the cliff. That cracked me up.
Yeah. Singing.
And then
the binoculars.
Singing in Spanish.
Werner at the pool made me laugh too.
Yeah. Lots of funny little moments for sure.
So the cooler was hysterical though. I just thought that was so funny.
He's in it for the long haul, man. He brought snacks. He's ready to go. He's ready for a stakeout.
Yeah. He was. I know.
Yeah. He probably made himself a couple of times.